Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host, Curtis, with my co-host, Aaliyah. And we are here today with Mr. Julio Rey, who is basically, well, he's been around for a long time. He's kind of like a pioneer in the metal industry. He played with the bands Frank's Enemy. He's still in Frank's Enemy, rather, and The Lead, which he's also still in technically, I believe. And he's been around for a long time. And he's here today to grace us with his presence and wisdom. And we're going to talk about some stuff. So first of all, Julio, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Curtis and Aaliyah.
You are very welcome. So the very first thing we always like to do is to start off with a little nutshell version of who you are and what you do. So if you could give us the nutshell.
Well, I think what I've done is basically written music and made recordings, played guitar as a Christian, you know, starting, well, this is the 40th anniversary of my first ever recording, which was a self-titled four-song EP that was recorded on Porta Studio. So I've been doing that since 82. Started off doing Christian pop punk, went on to Christian punk rock and hardcore punk, crossing over to metal with a group called The Lead, where we managed to play a few Christian festivals in the 80s and all that, and got a record deal with a REX Records Christian label and got a few things out. And after that, I went into Christian, I had another band, Christian death metal, called Frank's Enemy, and did that as a band, you know, with two other guys, until 1998. And then I kind of retired from, you know, actually being in a band. And since the early 2000s, I've been putting stuff out pretty DIY for the last 20 years or so. So that's what I've been doing. I've been, you know, I got a little bit of a crowd, a little bit of a public with The Lead and Frank's Enemy. And you know, my joy is writing songs of all kinds of genres. You know, I just put out a country song not long ago, and after that, I worked on like a death metal song. It's good stuff.
I don't think I knew about the country song, and if I did, I've totally forgotten.
Send it to us. I want to hear it.
Yeah. How does one find this song? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, sure. I recently renamed my solo projects under, I named them after my first EP that I put out 40 years ago. I made the name of the fake band Unrehearsed Walk. And I wrote a song one while I was really bent out of shape over this COVID stuff back in March of 2020 called Never Resting Easy Again. And it was this little country ditty, and I got around to recording it last year, and it's really simple, you know, but I did it all myself, a couple of guitars, you know, a bass, and the funny thing is drums, because I'm like one of the world's worst drummers, but I still drum anyway, just, you know, and the voice has a little bit of a twang to it, but yeah, it's Unrehearsed Walk. You can, I do have the domain name, unrehearsedwalk.com. That'll take you to its Bandcamp page, and you'll see it there.
I just started listening to it a little bit while you were talking, just to kind of preview it. That's why I was on mute for a minute there. I had to see what the heck we were talking about there.
Are you still going to interview me?
Oh, we are. Yeah. We are. I only heard the first 20 seconds of talking, so I can't say one way or the other.
I mean, I am a 62-year-old man, so, you know, you got to give me some leeway here.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So to start off with everything, so, okay, so you've been doing music, you said, for about 40 years. Now, just to make Julio feel even older than he already probably does.
That's just recording. I started playing guitar in 1974. So,
oh, wow.
And I have these, like, horrendously crappy cassette demos lying around there. I think I'm going to put them on Bandcamp anyway, just, you know, because I'm a glutton for punishment.
But just to make you feel even older, so I think I discovered the lead. What year did you guys do Burn This Record? Was it 88, 87?
Actually, that one we put out in 89.
89?
Yes.
Damn it. 12, not 10. I thought I was 10. Damn it.
Oh, well.
Dang it.
That's
okay.
All right. I mean, that's not bad. I mean, you know, that's better than how I did. I mean, I didn't get my grandmother gave me my first metal record, which was Black Sabbath's Paranoid for Christmas 1974. I was already 14, so, you know.
Oh, so I beat you by a couple of years, and
you beat me by a couple of years, you know.
And mine was thrash at 12. You just had the original metal stuff. Where was I going with this? I actually had a good question to start off, and now I'm blank because we started talking.
I derailed you.
You did derail me.
I have a question. What made you decide to branch off from being in a band and start working solo?
I had been married for about 5 years when I stopped being in bands, and I just didn't think I'd be able to start a family and be in a band at the same time. I mean, it was always a side thing. I mean, I've never really depended on my music for income. I mean, it might be kind of a denigration, but I would say it's kind of a hobby, although it's a real passion to me. And, you know, since I really wasn't making any money at it and all that, my wife and I got to the point where we wanted to have our children. So, you know, I made a conscious decision to stop Frank's Enemy and concentrate on raising a family, you know, and succeeded on that. I got 4 kids now.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a feat in and of itself.
Yeah, yes, that becomes more apparent every day, even at this juncture.
I couldn't deal with 4. I'm sorry. I can barely deal with it. I'm like, no more. I'm good. Thank you. But anyways,
you have 2, Curtis?
I have 2. Yeah, I have 2.
How old are they now?
Man, I just lost track. 8 and 10.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Well, my youngest is 13. You know.
Yeah,
he's cool.
I'm not looking forward to them getting to be teenagers. I have to be honest. Maybe it's fun.
Well, I mean, there's pros and cons to every stage. You know, what can I say? At least I know about these hip hop artists like XXXTentacion and Lil Darkie because of my kids. So there we go, you know.
Works of parenthood.
Yeah. But anyways, so where were we going with this? Oh, I wanted to ask you about, okay, so you talked about, I think you said frustration, if I'm not mistaken, with the COVID thing. What, like, and you started doing some music because of that. Can you go into that a little bit, or did I misunderstand you?
No, you didn't misunderstand me, but this was at the very beginning when we didn't really know what we were up against. So okay. I was feeling this existential, you know, threat or something. So I wrote those 2 songs that are in that particular single that have like the great covers, you know, the one blues and the one country, which, you know, are very, very negative ones, you know, but I was just, you know, just letting it out, you know. Yeah. I did a whole Frank's Enemy project after that, you know, that had to do with COVID, and that's a little more confident, I guess, in its own way, you know, a little more opinionated. Whereas with the ones that were Unrehearsed Walk are, you know, they're just sort of lamentations, you know.
Yeah. Now, just out of curiosity, now we're going to get controversial for a brief second here. So you, like, on your Frank's Enemy stuff, you do have a little bit of controversial imagery type stuff at times. How do you ever get any flack for that, or?
No, not at all. Maybe I will now.
Maybe, but like never had any issue, nothing.
No, nothing really. Is there one particularly in mind that you consider controversial? I mean, I've always been like ambiguous, but I, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
I try to be artistic. I mean, I am like a graphic designer and all by trade, and you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, maybe I shouldn't call it. Maybe I shouldn't say it, just in case no one else is. Because if no one else is noticing and you don't know what I'm talking about, then I'm not even going to bring it.
Okay. All right. No, I mean, I just, is it the one where I put Bernie Sanders in the Lincoln Memorial?
I wasn't even thinking about that one, but yeah, that would be one too, probably.
Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of like trying to be like ironic, you know, it's kind of making, you know, I really try not to sink into propaganda with anything I do here. I think I'm ambiguous enough, you know, to make you think. Yeah. You know, as opposed to, you know, going into Rage Against the Machine or something where, you know exactly where they're coming from, you know. I mean, yeah. I did a song about the January 6th. It really wasn't. I had it going before the January 6th thing at the Capitol.
Yeah.
And when it happened, I actually put out a rough mix on Facebook and all that, and I did use the image of that maniac with the horns inside the Congress thing, you know. But the title of that song is called Badass, and it's actually like criticizing them, you know, saying, "Oh, you think you're like a badass, but you're really just afraid," you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, in other words, you had no flack with this so far.
I have what? No flack at all.
No flack. Okay. Cool.
No, none at all. You know, maybe I should, you know, because maybe my stuff, maybe nobody cares enough, you know.
I was just curious. So now let me ask you about that then, because now if I'm not mistaken, because I mean, yeah, the January 6th stuff is a little bit political. You know, you said you get the Bernie Sanders thing and stuff like that. How do you kind of do that without alienating potential fans, I guess, is what I'm want to know.
Well, I don't have that many fans to begin with at this point, so I don't think there's too many people to alienate, but I think that the people that do get into what I'm doing, you know, I think they understand where I'm coming from, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you don't, I don't think there's any easy answers, you know, so.
Yeah. I don't think you really take any sides either, though, judging by what I've seen. It's kind of like you seem like you're more like center versus extreme, either
yeah.
or.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a registered libertarian, so I have beef with both sides.
Hate them all, just like me.
Yeah.
Hate them all. Aaliyah, do you want to ask a follow-up before I go on to the next one?
I guess we could dive a little bit deeper into that, because it does seem like a lot of people take the mindset that it's better to not take a position on things with your public persona. So what's your take on that? Do you think that bands in general should avoid making statements about that stuff unless they're a political band or something?
Yeah, I really can't speak for other bands, you know. I can really only speak for myself, and I feel like I have to just be as honest as I can be, you know, to my art, and really, truly, I think that, you know, poetry and art and all that, in order to not descend into pure propaganda, you know, there's got to be a little bit of ambiguity here. You know, I don't necessarily want to, you know, write campaign music for the candidates that I like. You know, I don't think they're best served, you know, by me doing this, you know. And I mean, it's really a struggle that I'm not new to. I mean, when I was with The Lead in the 1980s and Frank's Enemy in the 1990s, there was always this tension between, you know, whether you should, you know, how explicit you want to be with your with the music in terms of evangelizing for Jesus or making an artistic statement and all. I mean, it's there's kind of a tension there, you know. And I mean, it was especially tough in the 80s with the lead, because before then there wasn't, you know, the music that was in churches was, for the most part, you know, the old hymns and things like that, you know. I mean, it was really uncharted territory for, you know, drums, bass, and guitar, you know, to be doing that kind of music, you know. So we didn't have, you know, those options, you know. I mean, looking back, you know, and I think I might have said this with to Curtis in an earlier podcast, you know, Nina, the bass player and Koru, songwriter in the lead, you know, she was really a worship music, you know, leader, kind of in the making during the days of the lead. And I kind of didn't see it, you know. I wanted to, my vision was a little bit different, so it was a little bit of a clash there, you know. But I said a lot of words now, but I think that the bands really bands should be true to what they want to do, their vision, their art, you know, their expression. Yeah. And I think unfortunately a lot of art today does descend into propaganda of all kinds of different sides, you know. And I just wouldn't be comfortable doing that, you know. I feel like I'm already in doing marketing and stuff like that, so you know, this is going to be doing something different. It should be something different.
Sure. I agree with that.
Yeah. I was, but then I heard some music from the other room and I got distracted.
Okay. I'll keep going. So, just in regards, let's just wrap up the political end of things before moving on to anything else. So, now, you said you don't want to be Rage Against the Machine. Obviously, you don't really think people should be kind of preachy in that regards and stuff. So what kind of topics do you think bands should be focused on in their music? Like, I guess, not necessarily from a Christian perspective, but in general, do you think it should be more personal, or do you think it should be pushing a certain thing, maybe not political, but something else?
It's really so hard for me to answer because it's so personal. Fair. You know, and I say this as somebody that actually enjoyed Rage Against Machine in the 90s, even though I think that their political philosophy and all that was really diametrically opposite, you know, to mine. But I mean, I look at some of the lyrics that they've done and all that, and you know, it's well made. I think they do manage to make their case without getting too explicit, and there's a little bit of give and take in the lyrics and all, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, even if you have a topic that you really want to express and all that, you know, it's just express it with some artfulness, you know. I mean, as far as what topics are allowed and what aren't, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there's like neo-Nazi bands out there probably still, like in Europe. I don't know, you know, what can I say? You know, what, I mean, I'd rather, so, you know, any bands that actually promote hate, whatever hate, you know, I probably wouldn't want that to be too popular, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's really a personal thing. You know, I think I'm speaking more to the form than the content here.
Yeah, I get it. What do you think? So just to briefly go over the topic of free speech, since you brought it up, what do you think that there should be any limits in music for that? Or do you think it should just be like whatever goes
out of curiosity? I don't think there should be any kind of government censorship or control of content of music at all. I think if there's anything disagreeable out there, better that it be out there,
yeah,
and better that it be rebutted,
yeah,
you know. Yeah, so
yeah, it's that philosophy, the light disinfects, you know. If you don't know something is there, then you can't clean it up.
Yeah. And I think one thing a lot of people don't, well, some people seem to not really take into account is most people aren't dumb and they can kind of differentiate between, you know, something stupid, like you were talking about hate, for example, neo-Nazi, and not, because most people that are sensible will listen to something like that and go, that's stupid. You know what I mean? So,
or yeah.
Yeah. Or they don't want to listen to it or whatever. At least that's my own opinion. Like if I see something like that, I go, that's stupid. You know, I'm not going to want anything to do with it. Any thoughts on that, Julio, before we go on to the next topic?
No, I mean, it's better that it's out in the open than suppressed. I think if we're talking about official government censorship and all that, I think what gets censored is it becomes more desirable. If it's scarce, it becomes more desirable and all. I think it can be properly trivialized and deservingly trivialized if it's out in the open.
Let's just turn it around for a second. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. What about you as a parent?
I can censor my kids' content here in the house. I don't think I want the government to do that.
But what's your own role for as a parent, I guess, is what I'm asking you.
Oh, my own rule?
Yours, yeah.
My own rule. I've controlled the content. I mean, I told you about some of those hip hop artists that my kids have turned me on to and all that, but they're at this point, they're okay to listen to it, you know, at the ages that they're in, them being teenagers and all that. And my talking with them and all that, I know that they're not going to go out and, you know, knock over liquor stores or something because of listening to that music, you know, they know how to consume it without letting it take them over. And if I see something otherwise, then I would deal with it then, you know. I mean, it's really hard to make a hard, fast rule here, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, when I had toddlers in the house, I didn't feel comfortable like blasting Slayer, you know, and stuff like that. So
unlike me.
I still have the records.
I'll admit I did it.
Okay, well.
I totally did it. Aaliyah, what's your opinion on this before we move on?
Then
I'll give mine.
I'm pretty much on the same page, I'd say. I don't know really how to articulate my opinions on this subject very well. I don't have children yet, so
fair.
I haven't had to deal with censoring anyone else's stuff myself, but I would definitely prefer to have that in my own hands.
Fair.
So that I know what's going on.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, people change. I mean, my tastes changed from before I got married to now. They changed from before I had kids to now, you know.
Yep.
Stuff that I used to, like, really enjoy a lot when I was in my 20s, don't enjoy so much right now as a senior citizen, you know.
You're not a senior citizen yet. You got, like, 4 years, something like that? Like, dude.
You kind of broke up a little bit, so I couldn't hear you.
I said you're not quite a senior citizen yet. You got like 3 or 4 years. Quit calling yourself a senior citizen.
Well, I can get some of the discounts.
You're 55,
you can start getting discounts.
Okay, I'll be quiet then. If you're getting a discount, I'll let you call yourself a senior citizen. Then I wasn't even thinking about the discount. Man, you keep the rate, though. Okay, so what were we going to do next? We just talked about censorship. So let's talk about, you brought up very briefly, we'll go into your lyrical topic here for a brief second, about kind of like the pull between being too preachy and evangelical versus not being. So how do you kind of resolve that if you're in a Christian band, you're signed to a Christian label? What do you do?
Well, it's different when you're signed to a label as opposed to if you're doing it on your own independently. If you're doing it on your own independently, it's between the members of the band, you know. I find that in the bands I was in, you know, certain members were more passionate about the evangelical aspect of it than others, mm-hmm. you know. And in Frank's Enemy, I always geared the lyrics toward that, at least one or two songs per record, if I recall correctly, you know, that was a little more explicit than others, you know. So, but when you're, I think when you're with a Christian label, I think, I mean, the agenda was really different back in the 80s than it is now. You know, there was maybe three or four bands that, you know, had a certain high profile when we were starting out, and there was like nobody else.
Yeah.
So, you know, things really changed quite a bit. So I think we were a lot more explicit, especially during our punk and hardcore days,
yeah.
You know, where we were sort of trying to match the in your faceness of punk rock with its topics, where we were going to be in your face with our topic, you know, yeah. That being, you know, the gospel.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go back to, you know, the lead, The Past Behind, you know, was very evangelical,
yep.
And stuff Nina wrote and Burn This Record the same, you know, just real simple, in your face. And that was what we felt, where we needed to be at that point, you know?
Yeah. So
are you saying like when you mentioned the agenda being different back in the 80s versus now, do you mean like the record labels, the Christian record labels, have agendas?
No, I meant I meant what we felt as a band.
Okay.
You know, we kind of felt like, you know, there's all these lost punk and metal kids out there that need to hear about the gospel. So we're going to give it to them, you know. I mean, it is edging into the propaganda territory, but we were trying to do it as artfully as we could, you know.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call it propaganda. Well, I mean, okay, let's talk about propaganda for a minute here, since you brought it up. what do you think the line is between propaganda and, you know, expression?
It's tough to define, you know. I mean, because sometimes propaganda can be artistic in and of itself. I mean, stuff that came out of the Soviet Union in the 20s, yep. And graphic arts. And even out of Nazi Germany with Lani Reimspiel, I don't know, I forgot how you pronounce her last name, but the lady who did those documentaries about Nuremberg and the Olympics and all that, you know, just wonderful cinematography and, you know, just this glorification of that horrible thing. You know, you can accept that it's well-made art, you know, while also accepting that it's propaganda. It's a hard line to define, honestly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I know what you mean. I'm not really sure how you define it either.
I mean, it's one of these things that I know it. I mean, when I write a lyric and all that and put something together, I like after it's done, I kind of, you know, I kind of know it when I see it, you know,
yeah.
This is good. This is kind of a sellout, you know, whatever. So, I mean, it's almost case by case basis, to be honest. I don't think I have a rule of thumb for it, honestly.
Fair. And I think it kind of probably boils down to, or you probably have to kind of go like, well, do I want to be preachy or do I not want to be preachy in this song, I would think, right?
Yeah. That's, you know, you do make those decisions and all that. And, you know, for me, I find it impossible to write, to sit down and set out to write a lyric. It's like something's got to trigger me. And then the words come out, you know?
So, just out of random curiosity here. So, I mean, Aaliyah's the band person, probably has more thoughts on this than I do. When you set out to write a song though, like, are you intentionally trying to do it from the Christian angle, or is it just something that comes naturally? Is it pre-planned? I'm asking.
I think it comes out naturally. I generally don't set out to try to write a Christian song, at least not right now, you know. And I think pretty early on, I mean, thinking about it, I always thought, you know, I'm a Christian,
yeah.
And therefore everything I put out, you know, has to be informed by my faith, you know. Mm-hmm. So I should be honest about it, you know. Mm-hmm. Don't force it, you know. Just if there's something wrong with the lyric that I write, then there's something wrong with me as a person, because if I'm doing my job properly, you know, it should be like an honest expression of how I feel. And as a Christian person, you know, I'm supposed to be a certain way, you know. I don't know if I'm expressing myself here properly, but it's like I got to be true to myself, and myself has to be kind of true to God. That's kind of the way I look at it.
You got to have the image right, is what you're saying.
I'm sorry?
You got to have the image right, is what you're saying.
The image?
Like the way you look to other people plus yourself. Like, you want to have it consistent, is what I'm saying.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And that consistency has to be, you know, my outlook as a Christian. You know, I'm, you know, my identity is, you know, as, you know, a sinner saved by grace, believer in Jesus. And that informs every decision I make in my life and every expression that I do. At least that's the way it should be, you know. Obviously not perfect, you know, but that's what I shoot for.
So let me ask you this. So I'm going to play devil's advocate again. What about someone like Tom from Slayer, who has the, you know, obviously he doesn't believe in any things, but he goes to church. You know what I'm saying? I just want to get your viewpoint on that.
I do. You know, and I was glad to hear, you know, that he'd gotten to that point, you know. Can't judge him, you know. It's really between him and God, you know.
Fair.
So I'm glad. I'm glad that to me, it's better that he expresses, you know, a faith in God than none. I mean, okay, if you ask me, do I think he's going to heaven or not? I can't tell. But you know, I'm.
What do you think about the like you're saying, like, you know, when you're creating, you feel like you have to have that consistency there. But I'm saying, like, other people, how do you, yeah. Why do you think you can do that? Feel like you can.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I read the article in Spin magazine back in the 80s where Slayer took Bob Larson, this preacher, with them on tour. I thought that was great. Yeah. They pretty much admitted to him that they were kind of doing what they were doing to keep their audience, you know. Yeah. So I'm sure they were trying to do it artfully and all that. They were trying to do it as well as they could and all. But I mean, I think a lot of metal, you know, there's a lot of I think a lot of it is kind of maintaining an image and kind of doing things a certain way to appeal to these kids, you know. And I think that's cool. That's great, you know. And there is an element of giving the people what they want, you know. At the same time, I mean, I am an unapologetic capitalist, and if that's the case, you know, I also do want to keep the people that do want to buy my music happy, you know. So I don't necessarily have a problem with that, you know. I'm pretty permissive when it comes to these things, you know. I think bands should do what they feel they should be doing, you know.
Yeah. Do it without any reservation, basically, but just do it so that way you're not breaking your own integrity, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, I mean, as a Christian, I couldn't write a lot of the stuff that Tom has written in terms of his lyrics, you know. But, you know, that's another conversation, you know.
Yeah.
I just won't go there, you know. The music sounds great, and, you know, I can listen to them and concentrate on the music and not worry so much about what they're chattering about, you know.
Fair enough. Aaliyah, did you have a question for Julio? Like, we're running out of time, I just realized. We've got about 5 minutes.
I did have a thought on that also, though. You know, I feel like writing as yourself is kind of the primary way that a lot of artists do it, unless they're writing from another perspective entirely. Like, if you're in a fantasy metal band and you're writing songs about Lord of the Rings, then it's going to be informed by that world and the worldview of your character or whatever. But otherwise, you're going to be writing things that are going to come from your worldview. And unless your worldview is inconsistent with itself, which many people have such worldviews, but otherwise it's going to be consistent with who you are as a person and what you believe. I had that thought. I just wanted to say it.
That's cool.
Go ahead.
I don't deal that much in what you just called the fantasy metal and all that. I think it's fascinating stuff, you know. I think
things like Slayer and things like that, they are not writing things from their perspective as well. It's not like high fantasy, but it's a sort of fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I love Stephen King's books, you know. I've read like a whole bunch of them, and I know that that's a lot of where they're coming from, you know. I think just going back, it's just a matter of deciding up front what you're going to do with your with your art. And you know, Slayer's decided to do what they do, you know. And it's a whole different thing than from my perspective, you know. I'm not only a 62-year-old man, I've never been drunk and I've never been high, so you know, I've been like really clean living, you know. I've, for what it's worth, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, just kind of being an introvert or whatever, you know, but the whole lifestyle and all that never attracted me. I just like playing guitar and making recordings and making songs, you know. That's really what I like, you know. So yeah, it's good to just be able to do it from the comfort of my home, you know.
For sure. The one question I had, and I'm not sure if you have perspective on this, but if are there differences that you noticed when you were more involved with the other people in the scene, differences that you noticed in the heavy music Christian scene versus the secular scene?
Yes, there were. Yeah, I mean, we the lead opened for Suicidal Tendencies back in 85 and all that, and you know, everything was much rougher, you know, at the secular shows, you know, opening for those, you know, bands like Suicidal and MDC and all that down here in Miami, you know. And when we got to our Christian festivals, you know, it was like, you know, everybody was still dressed, you know, pretty crazy but you know, it was just a little bit more, I guess less aggressive is the way to put it back then, you know. Well, the last Cornerstone Festival that I went to with Frank Sinemy in the 90s, I think in the 90s, the secular and the Christian scene started to resemble each other a little bit more, you know, for better or worse, you know. I mean, I think we still tried to approach the scenes, you know, in good faith, you know, and with, you know, just trying to be good people to whoever we met, you know. So yeah, there were definitely much more pronounced differences in the 1980s. You know, I mean, we'd play churches in the 80s with the lead and people's jaws would be dropping because they wouldn't be expecting anything like that, you know.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So yeah, that's yep.
So the secular scene has kind of tamed a little bit and the Christian scene has gotten a little more extreme and they've kind of met in the middle somewhere. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, there's all these rules against like smoking indoors, you know, which I mean, to me, I mean, I started going to concerts in the late 70s and all, and always the main feature is like you feel like you're walking into a solid cloud of weed smoke, you know. And that was all gone by the like mid to late 90s, you know, I think, you know. So yeah, things like that. In terms of relationships and all, I've you know, there have been some bad scenes in some of the Christian shows, and there have been some good scenes in some of the secular shows. You know, I think it's all down to the individual people, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
So we got to wrap up, guys. So Aaliyah, do you got a final?
No, I mean, that was my final question. Do you have a final question, Curtis?
I do have a final question for Julio. So since we're talking about Slayer, what is the one Slayer album that you would recommend for anyone to listen to who has not heard Slayer, which I find hard to believe if they're listening?
Like who?
But
Well, I mean, I'd put a big caveat emptor as a Christian, but I mean, if you want to hear the quintessential thrash sound, you know, it begins and ends with Rain and Blood, you know.
Fair. Oh, you know what? Wait, I did have one more question. What would you say would be the Christian thrash album that people should listen to out of all of them, if you can think of one?
Yeah, sure. Believer, Extraction from Mortality, their first album.
Ooh, good choice. Very good choice.
What's your
pick, Curtis? They actually opened for the lead in New York and in Atlanta in 89, you know.
That's kind of funny because now you guys would have to be opening for them, but that's just amazing, isn't it?
Well, you know, they completely blew me away from the very beginning. You know, I mean, we were label mates in the late 80s, and you know, I just can't begin to. I mean, I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about Kirk and his guitar playing and Joey and his drumming. I mean, that just, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, I you know, in the realm of death metal, you know, I think Inhabit by Living Sacrifice that came out in 1994, to me, that hangs with anything grind-oriented that's secular, you know, and that's not even me being biased because I'm a Christian, you know. Fair. I'm still trying to replicate that guitar sound.
Fair. So to answer Leo's question, so my pick would either be, it's a hard one. I'm going to go with either Vengeance's Human Sacrifice or Psychosurgery by Tourniquet, probably. Believer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did have that first Vengeance record, you know. It was good. It was really good. And
it's good stuff.
Yeah. Roger Martinez introduced the lead at Cornerstone 90. That was interesting.
Aaliyah doesn't know anything about Roger Martinez. I asked her.
Well, I know what you told me. I read the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Roger Martinez, and then I decided not to. I think I brought him up on the last podcast we did.
Anyway. Yeah, I re-listened to that episode today. You did.
Cool.
Vengeance is their tape. Their CD was good. That first one, they're better live. They were really. They're brutal live. They were brutal live back then, I gotta tell you.
You can find I found a performance of them. I know we're kind of going off topic and dragging it out, my own damn fault, but you can find a live performance of them at Cornerstone from 91, I think, or 89, maybe, I don't remember. And they're dressed up as hippies.
Yes. They came, I think that was 90, and they call themselves, I think, the Flowers of Power or something like that. I was in the crowd for that one.
Yeah, it was kind of weird to watch, but it was pretty pretty good performance. It's like on it's on YouTube. You can actually find it if anybody wants to check it out. I'll
look for it.
Yeah, I think it was just typed in Vengeance Rising Live, but I don't remember.
Okay.
If I find the link, Julio, I'll send it to you because you might get a kick out of seeing it. It was pretty interesting to watch. But anyways, we should probably wrap up. So with that, I'm going to let Leah finish us off.
And until next time, everyone, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.